Hezbollah killing 3 people. In Gaza City, Israeli air and artillery strikes have left several Palestinians dead and many others injured. In the south, 12 bodies were recovered from a mass grave at the Al-Amal Hospital in Khan Yunis, which was previously seized by Israeli forces. The total death toll of Palestinians in the Gaza Strip has now risen to nearly 38,850. Our correspondent in Gaza, Moti Abu Musabe, tells us more about the latest Israeli atrocities in the besieged Strip. Let's take a listen.
The crazy Israeli bombardments against the central area of Gaza Strip are still underway indefinitely. The Israeli occupation warplanes continue to destroy and to target more Palestinian residential buildings. At least 3 residential buildings were targeted and destroyed in Al-Nusra refugee camp over the last couple of hours. At least 5 Palestinian civilians were reportedly, at least 15 Palestinian civilians were reportedly killed as a consequence of those successive attacks. In the meantime, another 2 residential buildings were targeted and destroyed in Al-Burej refugee camp. In Al-Zawaida town also, the Israeli occupation warplanes targeted and destroyed 2 residential buildings in addition to multiple warehouses. A big fire actually broke out in that area, leaving scores of casualties. The current situation is still tense in the central area of Gaza Strip, whereas the Israeli fighter drones and the surveillance drones are still hovering and flying at low levels, which means that more air strikes are expected to target and hit the central area of Gaza Strip. The Palestinian people here are completely engulfed and overwhelmed with concerns and fears that the Israeli occupation forces are intensifying their attacks against the central area of Gaza Strip as a preload of conducting another ground offensive against the central area of Gaza Strip, basically Al-Nusra refugee camp. Meanwhile, the Israeli artillery continued to shell and target the northern part of Al-Nusra refugee camp. More residential buildings were targeted and destroyed as well by the Israeli occupation forces using the explosive devices in Al-Mughraga and Al-Zahra towns in that area, in the northern part of the middle area of Gaza Strip.
The International Court of Justice says Israel's practices and policies in the occupied Palestinian territory are in violation of international law.
The state of Israel's continued presence in the occupied territory is unlawful. By 11 votes to 4, is of the opinion that the state of Israel is under an obligation to bring an end to bring to an end its unlawful presence in the occupied Palestinian territory as rapidly as possible. By 14 votes to 1, is of the opinion that the state of Israel is under an obligation to cease immediately all new settlement activities and to evacuate all settlers from the occupied Palestinian territory. By 14 votes to 1, is of the opinion that the State of Israel has the obligation to make reparation for the damage caused to all natural or legal persons concerned in the occupied Palestinian territory. By 12 votes to 3, is of the opinion that all states are under an obligation not to recognize as legal the situation arising from the unlawful presence of the State of Israel in the occupied Palestinian territory and not to render aid or assistance in maintaining the situation created by the continued presence of the State of Israel in the occupied Palestinian territory. By 12 votes to 3, is of the opinion that international organizations, including the United Nations, are under an obligation not to recognize as legal the situation arising from the unlawful presence of the State of Israel in the occupied Palestinian territory. By 12 votes to 3, is of the opinion that the United Nations, and especially the General Assembly, which requested this opinion, and the Security Council, should consider the precise modalities and further action required to bring to an end as rapidly as possible the unlawful presence of the State of Israel in the occupied Palestinian territory. By Israel and the Palestine Liberation Organization.
The ICJ said Israel has deprived Palestinians from their right to self-determination. The court also said Israel's settlement constructions in the occupied West Bank are in breach of the Fourth Geneva Convention. The ICJ says exploitation of natural resources in the Palestinian territory by Israel is in breach of international law. The top UN court says, despite Israel's military withdrawal in 2005, the Gaza Strip is still under occupation and Israel must fulfill its obligations as the occupying power in the Palestinian Strip. The United Nations General Assembly had asked for the advisory opinion of the ICJ in December 2022. It requested the court to give its opinion on the legal consequences of Israel's continuing violation of the right of the Palestinian people to self-determination. Also, the UN wanted its opinion on Israel's prolonged occupation, annexation, and settlement construction on the Palestinian territory occupied since 1967. Meanwhile, the Palestinian Minister of Foreign Affairs, Riyad Maliki, urges all states to review their bilateral ties with Israel after the International Court of Justice announces its advisory opinion on Israel's actions in the occupied Palestinian territory.
Today is about the brave and noble Palestinian people and their absolute, non-negotiable right to freedom from colonial control and violence. The court said this right must no longer be denied or deferred. The court made clear that the Palestinian people are the only sovereign in the occupied Palestinian territory, including East Jerusalem, and that the international community is under an obligation not just to reaffirm the Palestinian people's right to self-determination, but to see to it that this right is implemented immediately. All states and the UN are now under obligation not to recognize the legality of Israel's presence in the occupied Palestinian territory and to do nothing to assist Israel in maintaining this illegal situation. They are directed by the court to bring Israel's illegal occupation to an end. This means all states and the UN must immediately review their bilateral relations with Israel to ensure their policies do not aid in Israel's continued aggression against the Palestinian people, whether directly or indirectly.
To bring to an end as rapidly as possible,
the Hamas resistance movement welcomed the ruling as well. In a statement, it said the verdict affirms the illegitimacy of the Zionist occupation and calls for its end. With the ongoing Israeli violence in Gaza, the occupied West Bank and the Al-Quds, the movement urged the UN and its Security Council to act on this ruling. The Palestinian authorities also praised the verdict. They said the ruling proves the illegality of the Israeli occupation and reaffirms Palestinians' right to self-determination and liberation. The Secretary General of the Palestinian National Initiative, Mustafa Barghouti, also hailed the ruling as a significant victory for the Palestinian cause. Yemen has carried out a drone strike on Tel Aviv as part of its ongoing retaliatory operations against Israel over the war on Gaza. The strike left one person dead and several others injured. It happened in an area near the US consulate office, causing damage to it. The Israeli regime has promised to respond to the attack that involved using a drone capable of evading radar systems. Abdul Latif Abu Shali reports from Sana'a.
The Yemeni armed forces have conducted a notable drone attack targeting the Yafa region, also known as Tel Aviv. The strike was launched using a newly developed drone named Yafa. According to Yemeni military sources, the drone is capable of evading the enemy's interception systems and is undetectable by radars.
The UAV force of the Yemeni armed forces, with the help of Allah Almighty, carried out a specific military operation which consisted of targeting one of the important targets in the occupied Jaffa region, what is now called Israeli Tel Aviv. The operation was carried out with a new drone called Yafa, which is capable of bypassing the enemy's interception systems and undetectable by radars. The operation has achieved its goals successfully.
Saria also said that Tel Aviv will remain a primary target for the Yemeni armed forces. He added that Yemen will continue to strike positions in Israel, including sensitive military and intelligence targets.
This attack is a victory for Sana'a and the entire axis of resistance. The operation carried out at this sensitive juncture shows that Sana'a is aware of what it is saying and has precisely set its goals and chosen them carefully at all levels, military, economic, and political. The strike targeted Israel's decision-making center despite the regime's advanced air defense systems.
The Yemeni military also pledged to continue its anti-Israel strikes in retaliation for the crimes being committed against Palestinians in Gaza on a daily basis.
The continuation of the brutal Israeli war on Gaza has prompted the Yemeni armed forces to launch a new phase of their military operations targeting Israel's most important city. Yemeni officials say that the attack also demonstrated the vulnerability of Israel's air defense systems. Abdul Latif Al Washali, Sana'a.
Meanwhile, hundreds of thousands of Yemenis have once again poured into the streets of the capital Sana'a as part of its weekly nationwide rallies in support of the Palestinian people. Yemenis held giant Palestinian flags while denouncing the U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza. They expressed full support for their army's anti-Israel operations, chanting, "If the whole world goes to war with us, we won't stop fulfilling our duty." The Arab country has been holding rallies every Friday in solidarity with Palestine since the war broke out in Gaza in early October. It has also launched hundreds of anti-Israel operations in international waters to force Israel into ending the war on the Gaza Strip. Yemen says it will continue to back Palestinians until the ongoing genocide comes to an end. The Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah says it has hit Israeli military positions in the northern occupied territories with scores of rockets. Our correspondent in Beirut, Mariam Saleh, says Hezbollah forces have also targeted several Israeli settlements for the first time in response to the regime's strikes on civilians in Lebanon. Let's take a listen.
The resistance launched more than 16 operations today, and many of them were targeting settlements that have not been targeted before by the Lebanese resistance. And this is also due to the fact, and it seems that it is orders from Hezbollah Secretary General Said Hassan Nasrallah, who clearly said on Ashura Day that the resistance will be targeting new settlements or settlements that have not been targeted before by the resistance if the Israelis continue to target civilians. Now, last night was a night of heavy shelling from the Israelis. They targeted several towns like Safat al-Batir, Khabit Salem, as well as Jumeirah. And these are towns which are heavily inhabited, and many of the displaced people from the bordering towns went to live in those towns. And so the shelling came very close to civilians. Many of the civilians were also injured. And this has led, of course, Hezbollah to launch this retaliation. They clearly said in their statements that this is in retaliation for the targeting of civilian areas in the towns that we mentioned, like Safa al-Batir and Khabit Salem and so on. The Hezbollah said that they used tens of rockets, dozens of rockets. So here we're talking about heavy shelling. The three settlements, the colonial settlements of the Israelis that were targeted just recently, were Abirim, Nifaziv, as well as Manut. And so these are settlements that we just heard of that were declared by Hezbollah. Now, Hezbollah also launched several qualitative operations as well, in addition to the routine operations that they launch, especially against areas in the Lebanese-occupied territories, in the Shabab Farms and Farshuba Hills. They also launched two drone attacks, one with a squadron of drones against the recent command center and headquarters of the 91st Division, which is also the Galili Division. It is, of course, part of the what the Israelis call the Northern Command. And so it is a very significant a position, very significant barracks. They said they targeted the housing units also of officers and soldiers, and they say they also were able to precisely hit their target, definitely leaving scores of Israeli soldiers either killed or wounded. Of course, the Israelis do not admit directly to the number of casualties.
The Islamic Resistance in Iraq says it has carried out a new retaliatory operation against an Israeli target in the occupied Palestinian territories. The umbrella group says it used the Al-Arqab cruise missile to hit a military target in Haifa. The Iraqi resistance says the attack was a response to the Israeli massacre of Palestinian civilians in Gaza, including women, children, and the elderly. It vowed to continue with its retaliatory operations against the regime. The Islamic Resistance in Iraq has been conducting operations in support of Palestinians since Israel began its genocide in Gaza last October. Thank you for listening. Take care and bye-bye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Struggling U.S. President Joe Biden is stubbornly insisting on continuing his re-election campaign, as Democrats mull forcing him to abandon the presidential race. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Iran's Press TV has covered this story and tells us more. Irrespective of who wins the presidential election in the United States this November, the losers will be the American people. Make no mistake about that. The first presidential debate between the two contenders, incumbent Joe Biden and returning challenger and former President Donald Trump, was an unmitigated disaster that stunned not only the American public, but the carefully maintained and imperialist-controlled American media machine. American voters have had experience with both candidates leading the polarized nation, Donald Trump from 2017 to 2021 and Joe Biden from 2021 until now. Both presidents have brought catastrophe not just to the United States but globally. This upcoming election will be between the same candidates as in 2020. But with worsening conditions domestically and globally. The debate, which took place at CNN studios in Atlanta, Georgia, and was scheduled early in the election cycle, was a disaster from start to finish. Donald Trump and Joe Biden both lied, avoided questions, and delivered childish remarks towards one another, with the maturity of pre-adolescent children, far from norm of any world leader. Donald Trump delivered his usual chaotic antics in between racist remarks and question dodging. After becoming the first American president to be convicted of a felony crime, which of course is related to cheating the electoral system and not the numerous imperialist crimes that come with the day-to-day running of the presidency, Trump doubled down on his bid for the presidency, accusing Joe Biden of weaponizing the state in order to stop him from becoming president. Trump blamed the worsening shape of the American economy on Biden's policies, primarily citing the migrant crisis at the southern border with Mexico, even during unrelated questions. It is worth noting that Joe Biden has more or less continued Trump's border policies, even continuing the infamous border wall that Donald Trump started and maintaining horrific migrant detention centers, where Border Patrol agents exploit and abuse migrants seeking asylum. The migrant crisis is a direct result of the economic warfare against Latin American and Caribbean countries, something that both Joe Biden and Donald Trump have maintained. Donald Trump repeatedly refused to answer the questions, running out of time multiple times as he riffed on unrelated topics such as his own trial. The 6th of January 2021 riot on Capitol Hill and criticisms of Joe Biden. He was reminded of some questions several times whilst continuing to ignore them, a classic Trump deflection strategy that he has mastered over the years. Decades of experience of being a real estate con man has made it a predictable strategy for him, which makes it all the more concerning that the moderators of the debate did not force him to answer the question or even fact-check him on his numerous false claims, even once, particularly around the performance of the economy for everyday workers. Joe Biden's performance was similarly catastrophic. From the get-go, Biden's statements were filled with gaffes and confusing delivery. He delivered numerous false statements and blanket answers that failed to seriously address any question. Furthermore, he dived into several off-topic answers multiple times and even collided with Donald Trump's childish remarks and antics, going jab for jab once on the topic of golfing, a sport the majority of Americans do not play or even watch. On the one hand, Biden would claim that under his administration, the economic issues were going in the right direction. When pressed on matters like deteriorating conditions for black Americans, Joe Biden would deflect and blame Donald Trump, claiming that Trump's administration left a mess for him to clean up. But a lot of Biden's policies are a continuation of Donald Trump's, making the two administrations virtually the same on a range of topics. The inability to differentiate himself from Donald Trump whilst not offering any promising answers, even for current issues his administration is involved in, shook viewers' confidence in Biden's ability to lead the nation. Furthermore, Joe Biden continuously mumbled or drifted into other topics mid-sentence, causing panic over his mental ability to lead. It is reported that many Democratic officials were in a state of panic during the televised debate, as signs of Biden's mental deterioration were obviously clear. Biden's poor performance even raised the eyebrows of various establishment media outlets that typically praise or defend him. The New York Times editorial board released an opinion editorial asserting the best way for Joe Biden to serve his country was to step down and let someone else run for president. The sentiment was shared by numerous Democratic analysts and political commentators who have backed Joe Biden throughout his current term. The British newspaper The Financial Times has also covered the same story. Many pro-Biden Democrats asserted that Biden was just having a bad debate night and looked to his campaign rally the next day as proof for their claims, where Biden seemed refreshed and energetic. However, netizens on various social media platforms attributed this to Biden being more awake during the day and sundowning at night, as the debate was scheduled for 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Sundowning is a term typically associated with those who suffer from Alzheimer's disease or dementia. Many are wondering if it's too late to swap Joe Biden. The Democratic National Convention is scheduled for August in the city of Chicago, Illinois, where widespread protests against Joe Biden are expected as the genocide in the Gaza Strip continues to be a main rallying point for millions of people. Thousands are expected to bus into the Midwest city of Chicago to protest Joe Biden's role in arming the Israeli regime. Spectators have been hypothesized that the reason for the debate being scheduled unusually early in the cycle may be to pressure the Biden administration to step down before the convention, as it would take some months to build up a voter surge for a step-in candidate. However, Joe Biden has maintained that he will run despite mounting pressure for him to quit the race. Even if you ignore the depleting mental and physical conditions of both Joe Biden and Donald Trump, there is no doubt that both presidential candidates are racist imperialists, even before their mental and physical degradation in recent years. Joe Biden was in favor of segregationist policies during the peak of the U.S. civil rights movement. Donald Trump is a lifelong racist, much like his father, Fred Trump, whose questionable business exploits since the start of his career included exploiting undocumented workers and denying black people housing from his real estate projects. Neither of them has flinched when it comes to their support for the racist Zionist regime. Both also work to cut already small social safety nets Americans have, like Social Security and Medicare.
This is A to Z. An introduction into Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, how Imam Hussein alayhi salam teaches us to live by our beliefs. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, an honor to be here at your service. The month of Muharram and commemorating the martyrdom and mission of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, the master of martyrs. We learn from Imam Hussein alayhi salam that we must live by our beliefs. We must not change our beliefs based upon the circumstances of our life. And so when the chips are down and things are not going our way, or we want to achieve something, well, we let go of our beliefs. We don't follow up on our beliefs. We let go of our beliefs, or we hide our beliefs, or we just plain and simple don't believe. Why? So that we can gain something, or we can add something to our material wealth, or our status, or our position. Sometimes, in order to acquire some physical thing, we go out of our way to the extent where we sacrifice our beliefs. We would lie, we would cheat, we would find shortcuts. We will do whatever we can to achieve that something. And so in reality, what happens is that we sacrifice our belief for some petty thing that we're trying to gain, something personal, or some comfort, or some kind of a added gain in our life. Imam Hussein alayhi salam, he teaches us the opposite, that we should never sacrifice our belief for anything.
Why is my heart set on fire when I hear your name?
As-salamu alayka
Welcome back. This is A to Z on IRIB English Radio. So we're talking about how Imam Hussein alayhi salam teaches us to live by our beliefs. So when we're talking about living by our beliefs, we need to be steadfast when it comes to our belief, our faith, our conviction. We shouldn't sacrifice our belief for anything. Our belief in Allah, our belief in the Quran, our belief in the pure Muhammadan Islam, our belief in the Messenger of Allah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi, our belief in the infallible and immaculate Imams and the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, our belief in Imam Hussein alayhi as-salam. Our belief is what we have, and it is this belief, this faith, this conviction which will help us in the next world, which is the eternal world. But when we sacrifice our belief, we might gain something on a personal level in this world, gain something that will diminish over time, if we gain it at all in the first place. And not only are we gaining something which is very petty and paltry, but we are also losing the hereafter. Imam Hussein alayhi salam, he teaches us that our beliefs and our actions must be one, and we should never sacrifice our beliefs for anything. On the contrary, we must sacrifice everything for our beliefs.
At the horizon, the source we're waiting for heat.
Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of A to Z. Don't forget to visit our website at parsetoday.ir/en, Call of Islam page, where you can find all of our previous programs and many others as well. Until another episode, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
But anyone stay here, won't be alive tomorrow. You can save yourself tonight and go. A deep silence filled the air.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us. And try to apply them to our daily lives. How is it possible? By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من. این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين.
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
والذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش، با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد، اینها چیزایی لازم است.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
إِنَّ فِي ذَلِكَ لَعِبَرَةً.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن. از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran. Quran.
كتاب الله.
In the limelight.
President Joe Biden is weighing a slate of proposals aimed at dramatically reforming the Supreme Court, including imposing term limits for justices and establishing an enforceable code of ethics. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. The national broadcaster CBS News has covered this story and tells us more. President Biden is considering a series of proposals to reform the Supreme Court, including measures to establish term limits for justices and an enforceable ethics code. CBS News has learned. Any plans would require approval from Congress. The Washington Post was first to report President Biden's expected support for changes to the Supreme Court. The president revealed in a call with the Congressional Progressive Caucus on Saturday, 13th of July, that he's been working with experts on proposals to reform the nation's highest court to be announced soon. A source familiar with the call has confirmed. President Biden did not tell the group what his plans are, but his willingness to engage on the issue marks a shift for the president, who led the Judiciary Committee while serving in the U.S. Senate. It's not hyperbole to suggest Donald Trump is literally an existential threat to the very constitution of democracy we say we care about, President Biden told the progressive lawmakers. He added, I mean, if this guy wins, he's not, and now especially with the Supreme Court giving him the kind of breath, I don't need to get into the Supreme Court right now anyway. But I need your help, I need your advice, and I want to make sure that we have a closer working relationship because we're in this together. President Biden came under pressure from the liberal groups during the 2020 election to endorse reforms to the Supreme Court, including adding more seats to his current 9. Biden declined to back so-called court packing and instead created a commission to study proposals to change the High Court, which approved and submitted its final report to him in December of 2021. The commission did not recommend structural changes to the Supreme Court, but endorsed adoption of a code of ethics for Supreme Court justices. On the issue of term limits, the bipartisan panel examined 12 and 18-year terms, but warned that any law imposing such limits would likely be challenged in federal courts of law. President Biden has not publicly addressed the commission's findings, even as Democrats in Congress called for a legislative response to ethics issues at the Supreme Court. The court adopted its own code of conduct in November amid the pressure to enact ethics rules, but it does not contain any enforcement mechanism. The Supreme Court, which has a 6-3 conservative majority, has come under scrutiny in recent weeks as it handed down a slew of high-profile decisions to close out its term. Those rulings include reversing a 40-year-old decision to curtail federal regulatory power, invalidating a Trump-era ban on bump stock devices for semi-automatic rifles, and finding that former presidents are entitled to immunity from federal prosecution for official acts taken whilst in office. 2 years ago, the High Court dismantled the constitutional right to abortion, and last year, it rejected affirmative action for higher education. The landmark decision on presidential immunity has significant ramifications for the case brought against former President Donald Trump by special counsel Jack Smith, and further delays the start of a criminal trial in Washington, D.C. Donald Trump has pleaded not guilty to 4 federal charges. President Biden has criticized the decision of the Supreme Court, saying it means any president, including Donald Trump, will now be free to ignore the law of the land. The rulings came amid a year-long investigation by Senate Democrats into the ethics practices at the Supreme Court, launched after a news outlet, ProPublica, revealed Justice Clarence Thomas has accepted luxury travel from Republican megadonor Harlan Crow and did not disclose the trips on his annual financial disclosure form. The website Politico has also covered the same story. President Joe Biden is weighing a slate of proposals aimed at dramatically reforming the Supreme Court, including imposing term limits on justices and establishing an enforceable code of ethics, according to a person familiar with the matter. Joe Biden has also discussed calling for a constitutional amendment to limit immunity for presidents and certain other office holders in response to the court's ruling last month that presidents should be shielded from criminal prosecution for a range of official acts. The proposals are not yet finalized, according to the person who was granted anonymity to discuss private deliberations. But President Biden previewed the move during a call last week with progressive lawmakers, promising a major initiative to overhaul the Supreme Court, and an official announcement could come in a matter of weeks. Establishing term limits for justices and an ethics code would both require congressional approval, including 60 votes in the U.S. Senate, likely making for a tough path to passage, even if Joe Biden is re-elected and Democrats control both chambers of Congress next year. A constitutional amendment would face an even higher bar, requiring 2/3 support from both chambers of Congress or from a convention called by 2/3 of the states, as well as the approval of 3/4 of state legislatures. Proposing the package would nevertheless mark a significant shift for Joe Biden after dismissing calls for years to reform the Supreme Court. And it could help rebuild support among progressive Democrats, many of whom remain skeptical that Joe Biden can win re-election following a faltering debate performance last month. A former chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee, Joe Biden, during the 2020 presidential campaign, rejected a push by liberals to endorse expanding the Supreme Court. Instead, he created a commission to study possible changes, but has not taken action since that report was published in late 2021. The Supreme Court's presidential immunity decision, meanwhile, was cited earlier this week as the foundation for the dismissal of a criminal case against Donald Trump over his handling of classified documents. "I think the Supreme Court made a terrible decision," Joe Biden said during an NBC News interview on Monday, 15th of July. He added, "I would argue if you check surveyed constitutional scholarship, they seem out of touch with what the founders intended." Justices Clarence Thomas and Samuel Alito have also been embroiled in personal ethics scandals. Clarence Thomas was the subject of extensive reporting last year on his failure to disclose lavish gifts and travel and his close ties to wealthy Republican donors. Samuel Alito flew flags outside his homes that were associated with the January 6, 2021 insurrection. Those episodes have further ramped up scrutiny of the Supreme Court, whose members are appointed to lifetime terms.
minutes.
The recent presidential election in Iran has garnered significant attention globally, with the victory of Dr. Masoud Pezeshkian over his conservative rival, Dr. Saeed Jalili. The Western media has largely portrayed Pezeshkian as a reformist figure, suggesting a potential seismic shift towards the West in the coming months at the cost of the Islamic Revolution's principles. However, a closer examination of Pezeshkian's political history and his recent statements during the election campaign reveal a steadfast commitment to the revolutionary ideals and unwavering loyalty to the leadership of Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution. After securing victory in the presidential runoff election, Mr. Pezeshkian delivered a stirring address to a large audience at the mausoleum of Imam Khomeini, the revered founder of the Islamic Revolution. There, he reaffirmed his unwavering commitment to Imam Khomeini's revolutionary principles and praised the invaluable guidance and backing of Ayatollah Khamenei, promising to propel the nation to even greater heights. Later that day, he engaged in a five-hour meeting with Ayatollah Khamenei, during which the leader expressed his hopes for the president-elect to harness the country's resources for enhanced progress and prosperity. Regarding his strategy to implement the 7th Development Plan, Pezeshkian stressed the critical need to align new government initiatives with leaders' overarching general policies. In the initial runoff debate, the president-elect elucidated his foreign policy vision, underscoring the alignment with the enduring principles of the leader and Imam Khomeini, which transcend affiliations with either the East or the West. Simultaneously, Pezeshkian's steadfast belief in the pivotal role of the Islamic Revolution Guard Corps in safeguarding the nation's sovereignty and fostering national unity has been a consistent theme throughout his tenure as a legislator. In early December 2022, during his term as the Deputy Speaker of the Parliament, he lauded the contributions of the IRGC, emphasizing its indispensable role in preserving the nation's integrity. "We owe a debt of gratitude to the IRGC. Without their presence, our country would have faced severe fragmentation 100 times over, he said at the time, paying global tribute to the guards. "We must acknowledge and appreciate the defenders of our land and our dignity." He emphasized the importance of setting aside internal differences and heeding the directives of the leader of the Islamic Revolution in the face of external adversaries. During the climatic televised debate of the runoff presidential election, Pezeshkian delivered a heartfelt and reverent tribute to the esteemed Iranian anti-terror commander, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. Portraying General Soleimani as a beacon of national pride and a thorn in the side of adversaries, Pezeshkian hailed his pivotal role as the leader of the Axis of Resistance. He likened the revered Haj Qasem to a shining inspiration for the youth of the nation, depicting him as a trailblazer whose legacy serves as a guiding roadmap for future generations to emulate. During the presidential debates, Pezeshkian articulated a strategic roadmap for navigating challenges, particularly addressing the impact of sanctions imposed on the Islamic Republic. emphasizing the paramount importance of such strategies to uphold the core principles of dignity, wisdom, and expediency as outlined by the esteemed leader. His unwavering stance on U.S. sanctions has been a consistent thread throughout his distinguished political career. For instance, back in January 2019, while in his role as Deputy Speaker of Parliament, Pezeshkian unequivocally denounced the unjust nature of the U.S.-imposed sanctions. In a meeting dating back to September 2015 to evaluate the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, Pezeshkian lauded the nation's significant strides in peaceful nuclear advancement, attributing these achievements to compelling the U.S. into negotiating terms. Throughout his campaign for office, he underscored the criticality of possessing a diverse array of feasible options to surmount U.S. pressures and emphasized the crucial role of nurturing both regional and international alliances to propel national objectives forward. Emphasizing the pivotal role of neighboring states in shaping Iran's diplomatic landscape, Pezeshkian articulated his complete commitment to a foreign policy centered on promoting economic prosperity and bolstering security through robust regional collaboration. He underlined the significance of nurturing relations with neighboring countries based on shared interests and mutual goals. In a recent open letter directed towards Arab nations, Iran's president-elect Pezeshkian reaffirmed his dedication to strengthening diplomatic ties with all neighboring Persian Gulf states. Published in the esteemed Al Arabi Al Jadid news outlet, the letter accentuated the common ground and shared interests that bind Iran with its Muslim and Arab brethren on both international and regional fronts. Pezeshkian urged for unified collective action in addressing the enduring issue of Palestinian occupation, commending the steadfastness of the Palestinian people in the face of Israeli aggression. The letter poignantly stated, "It is incumbent upon us to confront the long-standing fight of the Palestinian occupation and endeavor towards healing this persistent wound." Moreover, it stressed the Islamic Republic's recognition and admiration for the resolute resistance displayed by the Palestinian populace against the brutal onslaught of the Israeli regime. Pezeshkian further underscored the urgent need for collaborative efforts in combating terrorism and extremism, viewing this as a shared challenge demanding united regional action. He emphasized the importance of both regional and global cooperation in striving towards a Middle East region devoid of weapons of mass destruction, cautioning against the destabilizing threat posed by the nuclear arsenal of the Zionist regime. As a sign of continued support and synergy between Iran and the axis of resistance, Pezeshkian received congratulatory messages from many resistance movements following his victory. Secretary General Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah of the Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah conveyed warm congratulations to Iran's president-elect in a message. Nasrallah's message expressed heartfelt felicitations to the president-elect and the people of Iran, invoking divine blessings for Pezeshkian's protection, guidance, and success. "I congratulate you on this blessed election by the dear and honorable Iranian people, and I ask God Almighty to protect you, help you, guide you, and enable you to achieve the hopes and aspirations of these loyal people and their sacrifices." The Lebanese Resistance Movement Secretary General Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah's message read, "Your Excellency, we will remain on this path with you, God willing, until we achieve final victory, the main pillar of which will be a strong, dear, and powerful Islamic Iran." In response, Pezeshkian expressed deep gratitude for the heartfelt message received from the esteemed 63-year-old Lebanese resistance leader, reaffirming Iran's solid dedication to bolstering the axis of resistance. Stressing that this commitment is firmly rooted in Iran's fundamental beliefs, Pezeshkian highlighted the enduring influence of the late Imam Khomeini's legacy and the steadfast direction provided by Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution. Addressing Hamas leader Ismail Haniyeh in a message, the Iranian president-elect provided reassurance regarding the eventual triumph of the Palestinian resistance against the Israeli occupation amidst the prolonged and devastating conflict in Gaza, which has tragically claimed approximately 38,000 lives over 9 months. Pezeshkian expressed confidence in the perseverance of the Palestinian people and their historic steadfastness, as well as the valiant efforts of the fighters in the Palestinian resistance, believing that their resilience and courage will pave the way for a victorious outcome and divine intervention against the occupation forces. Furthermore, he vowed comprehensive support from the Islamic Republic for the oppressed Palestinian nation until the fulfillment of their aspirations and rights, including the liberation of the revered city of Al-Quds. In contrast to how Western media portrays Pezeshkian as a reformist, a closer examination of his track record reveals a nuanced and layered individual. While he has indeed supported certain reformist policies and initiatives, his unwavering allegiance to the revolutionary ethos has consistently defined his political identity. Throughout his political journey, the former health minister and seasoned lawmaker has never shied away from upholding the principles of the Islamic Revolution. His unequivocal stances on critical issues such as the Palestinian cause, the resistance movement, and Iran's peaceful nuclear program leave no room for uncertainty regarding his primary identity as a revolutionary figure and dedicated champion of the nation's foundational values, always at the forefront of safeguarding national interests.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
If you ask me, why do I stand here so unafraid of everything around me? Proudly I would say, I am a Muslim. If you ask her, why does she dress that way? All covered up in a world that gives it all away. Proudly she would say, I am a Muslim.
Islamic laws.
If you ask him, why does he still pray 5 times a day when so many others have strayed? Smiling he would say, I am a Muslim.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of God, welcome to another edition of the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javid, our guest speaker. Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh, and welcome to the program.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullah. It is a pleasure to be with you.
The pleasure is all mine. Well, we actually are in the month of Muharram, and we are recording some of the jurisprudential laws based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei regarding Muharram and Imam Hussein and the mourning for the grandson of the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him, and his holy and pure family. And we'd like to continue actually along the same line on the same very subject. Sheikh Sawid, let me start with this question. You know, about actually Azadari or Matam and mourning and the manner, Muslim people in general and Shiite in particular are holding convening Muharram rituals and conventions, basically. What is the purpose